Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, headquarters of Militant Moderation, where we live by my dear friend Alan's noble creed. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, your host today. Please be sure to visit our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our show times. Well, ding dong, the shutdown is dead. The Democrat shutdown, the Schumer shutdown, officially ended today with President Donald Trump signing the bill that would reactivate the government until the next funding crisis, which he'll be along in a couple of months. So don't feel like there will be no further drama in your government. There will be, but the government's back open for the time being. And the spin wars have begun in earnest following the government shutdown. Now, President Trump, when he signed the bill to turn the government back on, he came out swinging. And he gave a press conference where he said the Democrats were a bunch of extremists that took the country hostage to fill their demands, which is absolutely true. The Democrats were driven to this by the extremist wing of their party. That's no secret. Senator Chuck Schumer, who has become synonymous with the shutdown, was dragged into this kicking and screaming by the likes of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the other radical Democrat extremist types, because they needed to show they were fighting fighters who could fight Donald Trump and fight him to the bitter end. And they demanded this big shutdown show. And they were literally holding the country hostage. I know if you're a Democrat, you don't want to hear this, but that is what they did. They shut the government down, and they counted on inflicting pain on the American people to the point where the Republicans would be intimidated into caving to Democrat demands. And what did they want? Well, President Trump ran down the list. He mentioned that they wanted money for illegal aliens, which is absolutely true. One of the reasons the Democrats took the country hostage was to get money for funding health care for legal aliens. They tried to deny it, but it's true. And that talking point died really early in the shutdown drama. And of course, they're demanding titanic amounts of money for the Obamacare scam, which is collapsing before our eyes and cannot survive unless more money is pumped into health care. So the Democrats did make it clear they were not going to vote for the bill that they said they would vote for, the continuing resolution, which is how shutdowns happen, by the way. You don't really have a plug that you pull out of the wall that makes the government go dark. It's not like a blue screen of death situation. What you do if you want to shut the government down is you refuse to vote on the continuing resolution that will keep it funded. And why do we have continuing resolutions? Because government funding is a horrible, miserable clown show and has been for years. And the government, which is worth God what now? How much does it spend? $12 trillion a year. And it just limps along from one CR and budget compromise to another without anybody really making a plan for reducing its spending and bringing it into line. And so that's why we have shutdown dramas, because basically these CRs keep coming up, and it usually happens right around this time of the year. And if you want to shut the government down, you just refuse to vote on it. And that's what the Democrats did. The Republicans did vote on it, as President Trump pointed out, something like 13 times the Republican Party voted for the CR to reopen the government, and the Democrats refused until they finally collapsed. Their resistance collapsed very quickly a couple of days ago, and they finally voted for the CR. It got through the House. Exactly enough Democrats voted for it, which meant all the rest of them could keep telling their constituents that they're fighting fighters who refused to vote for Donald Trump's fascist regime or whatever the hell they're saying, and the government finally got turned back on. So Trump comes out swinging about this when he turns the government back on, and he explains it exactly the way it is. The Democrats, of course, were not idle while President Trump was delivering his version of the story. So they ran to the airwaves to try to spin this thing in a number of hilariously unconvincing ways. And now this is a matter of taste. If you're watching a political debate, let's just say it's pretty clear that if you agree with somebody on one side of the political divide, you're going to think they did a better job of saying what they're saying than if you don't agree, right? That's just the way it works. But even given that, it is really hard to objectively look at the Democrat spin machine today and think these guys are doing a good job of spinning this catastrophe. Their hearts clearly are not in it. They're just fumbling for any old junk they can throw out there, and it's not working. So one of them was Madeline Dean, who is a Democrat of Pennsylvania, congresswoman, and she goes on Meet the Press, and she claimed the shutdown was a fantastic success because the Democrats were able to focus and get everybody else focused on the unaffordability of healthcare across this country. She said, we were very successful. Well, Representative Dean, what you were successful at was destroying the healthcare industry with a little thing we like to call the Affordable Care Act. Perhaps you have forgotten it, Representative Dean. It's known as Obamacare because your party shoved it through in the dead of night, like thieves in the night. During President Barack Obama's administration, you used parliamentary maneuvers to shove this bill down America's throat, even though you really didn't have the votes to get it done. And you wrecked the healthcare system. And insurance is completely out of control. The Affordable Care Act made it as unaffordable as it's ever been. And its whole system's collapsing. And the reason the Democrats panicked and shut the government down in October was because they had promised that the subsidies that were only temporary, well, now they want them to be permanent. Temporary pandemic subsidies, they were. That's what they told us. Oh, don't worry. This is just a little extra money to tide Obamacare over during the unprecedented crisis of the pandemic, the black swan event that no one could have seen coming. And here they are, you know, a couple years later. Oh, no, we need those subsidies to be forever, or else the whole system will collapse and everybody will die. And they seriously think we're going to forget that they did this to us, that the Democrat Party shoved Obamacare down our throats with zero Republican votes, no opposition votes whatsoever. I mean, I listened to Representative Dean. These people are delusional. Like, they've got to be out of their minds if they think everybody's going to forget why healthcare is unaffordable and exactly what program is collapsing and what it's called and who shoved it down our throats. And then you have Tim Kaine, a Democrat senator from Virginia who was once the running mate on a presidential ticket. And Tim Kaine goes out there and he starts talking about how the shutdown was incredibly dangerous because air traffic controllers weren't getting paid. And you're listening to him saying this and you're thinking, oh my God, this guy's being honest. He's actually admitting how dishonest and dangerous the Democrat ploy was. Oh, no, 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 no. He was claiming Republicans did all that because they wouldn't give in to the Democrats' terrorist demands. So it's all the Republicans' fault that the air traffic controllers weren't getting paid. And then he starts repeating the same malarkey about fixing the healthcare system as their top goal. What Democrats want, our top goal is to fix the healthcare system, Tim Kaine said. Many Republican senators and House members are saying, we know we need to fix some of the damage that was caused by the reconciliation bill. Particularly, we need to stop people's health insurance premiums from skyrocketing. Well, Tim Kaine, let me just remind you, let me say a couple of words to you you've forgotten. Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. This is you guys. You did this. Your party did this to us with zero Republican fingerprints on it. And there are no Republican senators or House members who think they need to fix damage. They all know Obamacare is a pile of garbage. It's in the middle of going down in flames. And it's time we get serious about repealing it and putting something in place that will actually work for the country. But the Democrats just want to keep pouring titanic amounts of money, trillions of dollars, into this non-functional black hole. And the dirty little secret of Obamacare is that at this point, it's really not working for anybody except for a few very elderly people and the insurance companies. That is the thing that amazes me about Obamacare. And for all these Democrats chirping that they think the shutdown was a huge success because we're all going to talk about how healthcare needs more money now, and they think we're all stupid and we forgot that the Affordable Care Act is what did this to us. The thing that amazes me about this moment of peril that the Democrats have created for themselves is that all this money is being poured into the insurance industry, which is not super popular with people. I mean, there are companies that people don't like. You could make a list of industries that people don't like, and health insurance is going to be pretty high on that list. And the Democrats' bill, the Affordable Care Act, is nothing more than a gigantic slush fund at this point that is screwing trillions of dollars out of the Treasury and pouring it into the pockets of insurance companies, which are proceeding to rook people left and right with crappy policies that don't actually do anything when you get sick, but they cost you a fortune. That's what Obamacare has done to us. And at the margins, You've got the people the Democrats always want to talk about that used to have no coverage, and now they have Obamacare coverage. And on the other hand, you have a couple of elderly people, a small percentage, that find this is working out reasonably well for them. But everybody else in the middle is just getting toasted, and they know it. That's the thing. They know it. And the Democrats, I think, were incredibly foolish by pulling this shutdown stunt to please their extremists and beginning this conversation that Kane and Dean are talking about. This is not a triumph for them that people are talking about this. It's a disaster. It's an absolute disaster for the Democrats unless, and this is not unrealistic, the Republicans completely drop the ball and save the Democrats for themselves by playing the health insurance card wrong. And that, the odds against that are not long. So maybe they're not crazy to try this spin, but it's still pretty crazy to hear it. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with the Alan Nathan Show.
According to a 2025 annual study by National Student Clearinghouse, more than 43 million people have some college credit but no degree. Devin Andrews, Vice President of Admissions and Evaluation at University of Phoenix, explains how to leverage prior college credit and pursue that degree.
Not everyone follows a straight path from high school to a college degree, but a University of Phoenix survey found that 33% of working adults don't realize that their college coursework might still apply toward a degree. Completing a degree can open doors to career enhancement, and previous college credit could count toward a degree, with the potential to save both time and money. Start by documenting your learning, check colleges or universities to see if they have clear policies on transferring credit, and look for tools that might help you assess your program time and cost.
Check out the University of Phoenix mobile app, TransferPath, and download it for a free pre-evaluation of transfer credit.
Butterball, the best-known and most loved brand of turkey in the U.S., has partnered with renowned ChefCorps brand Headley and Bennett to create the first-ever Thanksgiving hosting pants. Butterball turkey talk line expert Corey Gustavik shares more.
Roasting whole turkey isn't something most of us do every day. It can be intimidating and stressful, but the right clothes can make you feel more confident and comfortable in the kitchen. That's why Butterball created the first of their kind Thanksgiving hosting pants. Designed with a fun turkey print in Butterball blue, these pants are sure to give you swagger in the kitchen while keeping all your cooking essentials within arm's reach. With custom pockets for your meat thermometer and phone, loops for your utensils and towels, and a bottle opener to keep the party hydrated, these pants will help you get a leg up in your hosting duties this year. Butterball is giving away for free one final time while supplies last at noon Eastern this Monday, November 17th.
Learn more and claim your pair of hosting pants at ThanksgivingHostingPants.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie. This is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give me a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve. It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs. at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Well, one thing that did not shut down during the longest government shutdown of the modern era was lawfare. The machinery of lawfare ground on, with activist judges making crazy rulings in defiance of the Constitution and lawsuits moving forward to try to paralyze the Trump administration and overturn the results of the last election. Where does lawfare go from here now that the government is turned back on? The circus is probably going to be back to all three rings. Here with us to talk about it is Michael O'Neill, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
With you, John. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm glad to see that we're past this little drama. We're into the aftermath and spin period now. But I noticed that the lawfare stuff did not take a break while the government was shut down.
Oh, yeah. The courts generally stayed open. I mean, there was some filing hiccups and things like that. There were some delays with filings. But generally, the courts were operating and people were filing their lawsuits, and the left was filing its various and continuing lawsuits against any and all things executive from the Trump administration. And so you saw a wide bevy of that. You also saw some pushback on a couple of things, too, where you saw an actual Congress seeking to impeach a sitting federal judge, which is something that is unique in our history. It is unique in our time. Not that it hasn't occurred in the past, but it's something you really don't hear about very often. The House of Representatives bringing articles of impeachment against a sitting federal district court judge, which is something, again, that's something that's newsworthy and worth discussing, and kind of you're seeing a little bit of a pushback from the congressional branch of government. But now, yeah, we're seeing the full effect of all three branches kind of jockeying for the positions of where they are in our constitutional order and our separation of powers order.
Now, the impeachment you mentioned, these impeachment motion, this is directed against U.S. District Court James Boasberg, who is probably the worst of the left-wing activist judges out there. I mean, this guy is a full-blown political operative that just pretends to be a judge on alternate days. And the thing he's actually in trouble for is not just his activist rulings, but specifically Operation Arctic Frost, which was the Biden administration's shockingly massive effort to use the government to spy on its political opponents.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it dwarfs Watergate. I mean, anything. It's funny that Watergate has to be the standard bearer. That it should be replaced with this. I mean, this Biden Gate. I don't know how you, whatever new terminology we want to use, but we need to retire Watergate and use this, because Arctic Frost was just this massive investigation to surveil various opponents of the Biden administration, or I shouldn't say opponents, but philosophical people who differed philosophically. There were a number of conservative groups that were pulled into this. Of course, politicians were pulled into it. What really spurred the invocation of these impeachment articles was the fact that Judge Boasberg had authorized the surveillance of sitting members of Congress. And of course, that really runs afoul of the speech and debate clause in our Constitution, which gives sitting members of Congress the purview to engage in healthy speech and debate. And then when you see an executive branch, unduly illegally constituted special counsel seeking to investigate those sitting members of Congress, and then abetted by a sitting federal district court judge, it certainly raises a host of problems under our constitutional section and separation of powers. And that's really what spurred these impeachment articles. Not to set aside the importance of all the activists, the criticism, the valid criticism of Judge Boasberg's many and varied activist decisions in the past year.
You know, this is an amazingly quiet scandal, considering that the day before yesterday, everybody on the left was wailing and gnashing their teeth over Jimmy Kimmel getting suspended for a couple days as like some unprecedented attack on free speech and the public. Here's this gigantic scandal about the government suppressing political speech and conducting surveillance, but a Democrat did it, so they don't care.
Yeah, and it was done by, and this is my problem with these special counsels in general, and then operating outside the bounds of the supervisory and control of the Department of Justice or anybody accountable. I mean, you had this guy, Jack Smith, who was accountable to virtually no one, who was operating essentially with the full powers of a U.S. attorney, full investigative powers in multiple jurisdictions. And then he was able to get with, essentially, I mean, I don't know the specific details, but it certainly didn't cross the threshold for any necessary validation or justification, was able to get this ability to surveil sitting members of Congress. It's important to you when you think about it. Furthermore, there was also a gag order that was placed on these cell phone companies to ensure that none of these Congress people, senators and congressmen, were even remotely aware of what was happening. So you have a special counsel who's well outside the purview of the law and the Constitution surveilling Republican members of Congress for what? And again, this is wholly concocted scandals on the part of Zach Smith, virtually over nothing. And so we saw this. This is the danger in assigning any of these FISA warrants, these surveillance warrants, these individuals who operate outside the bounds of political accountability. You're seeing all the dangers really rise to the top with this when you have these operatives operating in secrecy.
The bit of judicial activism that really raised my eyebrow during the shutdown came pretty late in the game when you had a judge that ordered the Trump administration to fund the SNAP program, the food stamp program, even though the money hadn't been appropriated, which basically sets the Constitution on fire with a flamethrower. I thought we were supposed to have no kings, but here's a judge that decided they're a king and they're going to order money to be spent that hasn't been appropriated. Why didn't that get more attention? Because that was really outrageous.
Absolutely. That's good for you to talk about it. This is something that needs to be talked about. And even the Supreme Court, they're kind of punting right now. It's stayed. And the decision, the Supreme Court's sitting on it saying, okay, we're going to wait a couple of days because now, of course, it's going to be moot because the government's back in operative. So the Supreme Court didn't actually have to weigh in on this particular one. But certainly, can you imagine this? This harkens back to this really isn't unprecedented for our time. There's a judge up in Massachusetts who ordered the funding of Planned Parenthood from the Big Beautiful Bill. Remember, Planned Parenthood had been defunded. This judge had concluded that it was an unlawful bill of attainder. So even though the Congress, as you said, in SNAP benefits, Congress hadn't appropriated that money, and yet a judge was ordering it. Similarly, in the Planned Parenthood case, Congress actually passed a law defunding Planned Parenthood, and then you had a judge up in Massachusetts saying, oh, no, that constitutes a bill of attainder. You have to find the money for it. So you're right. These are these unprecedented new – we're in this new time where you're seeing this activism from these judges that really is ahistorical, John. I really can't think of any kind of comparable for it. And eventually you're going to have to see the circuit courts and the Supreme Court step in. In the breach there, again, you're seeing Congress starting to talk about this, limiting the Article III authority for some of these lower court judges. We're going to have to let the process play out. But one thing that really bears mentioning is kudos to the Trump administration Department of Justice lawyers who are really going all out. And they didn't stop, by the way. They necessarily weren't getting paid, but you saw attorneys in the civil division who've been litigating and ensuring that these cases go through the requisite appellate process and following these orders to the extent they can, and then appealing these decisions to the requisite courts of appeals and to the Supreme Court when necessary, even during the government shutdown. So there's a lot of moving parts here. A lot of people are working really hard to try to rein in these judges.
You know, it's funny, but this stuff never used to happen. We didn't have activist judges basically seizing control of executive power and even trying to take the power of the purse away from Congress. That never happens when Democrats are in office. It really didn't happen when anybody was in office until now. Now we're just used to it. But President Trump actually has a really good batting average of taking these things to the Supreme Court. The Trump administration is winning, I think, 90% of its cases.
Yeah.
It's just that it takes them a long time to do it because it's not easy to get something to the Supreme Court.
Right. It takes a lot of bandwidth, too. I mean, and you think it takes bandwidth from the White House. It takes bandwidth from the Department of Justice. These are lawyers that could be working on other matters. Instead, they're having to defend a lot of these specious lawsuits that are instituted and filed. Again, and think about this. Excepting this year, right? 12 of the last 16 years, you've had either Obama or Biden been the president. And so they've managed to put a lot of their sympathetic judges on the bench.
And I think we're still looking for a good answer to this. Impeaching judges, we have that on the table now with Boasberg. That's a pretty dramatic step, as you pointed out. It hasn't really been done before. But what else can you do? I mean, really, is there some kind of law we can pass against activist judges? I don't know. It seems like we're walking into new territory with every passing day. Michael O'Neill, Vice President of Legal Affairs at Landmark Legal Foundation. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Tonum Health, T-O-N-U-M, Tonum Health, and the product is Motus, M-O-T-U-S. It's a multiple ingredient formula that not only addresses GLP-1 with appetite and insulin sensitivity, but it also addresses fat oxidation and metabolism, addresses cellular energy with NAD levels. And so what we see is not only fat loss, quite frankly, exceeding that of these GLP-1 medications, where 87% of the weight that's lost is fat mass. That's a stark contrast to those medications. But we see numbers of weight loss as well that are pretty dramatic, 10.5% across the 6 months with the 100 study participants, and 14.5% weight loss with those that are doing excellent diet and exercise. Tonum.com, T-O-N-U-M, Tonum.com, and the product is MOTUS, M-O-T-U-S.
Small businesses face constant security challenges, from protecting property to keeping employees and customers safe. SimpliSafe is stepping in with a new suite of professional-grade security solutions designed specifically for business owners. TV host and entrepreneur Chip Wade has more.
As a business owner, I travel a lot for work. And it's reassuring to have a system that not only lets me monitor my businesses no matter where I am, but it's protected by trained agents who will intervene if there's trouble. It's about knowing my offices and workshops are protected even when I can't be there.
SimpliSafe Business Security offers customizable plans backed by 24/7 monitoring. Key features include AI-powered cameras, live agents who can help prevent crimes and call for help in an emergency, multi-camera live streaming, customized user access, and elevated customer support.
SimpliSafe aims to give business owners just like me peace of mind so they can focus on growing their businesses, all without long-term contracts or cancellation penalties.
To learn more, visit SimpliSafe.com.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. The month of October was an interesting one in politics because we had the shutdown, which ended up lasting 46 days altogether. And during much of that time, President Trump was out of the country. He was working on various foreign affairs with a considerable degree of success in a number of important cases. But there are those who say he spent too much time on foreign policy, not enough on domestic affairs during the shutdown, and it's more than time for him to become fully engaged with domestic matters once again. Here with us to talk about it is Kenneth Raposa, industry analyst from the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, thanks for having me back on. Appreciate it.
You have a really good article at the Daily Caller about this that echoes a lot of what I've been thinking. I am a foreign policy guy. That's kind of my main job as a writer. So I was all over the stuff Trump was doing and involved in all that and thinking it was impressive. But at the same time, it was easy to see that the domestic drama was playing out without him. And it was hurting the fact that he wasn't involved in the shutdown battle. He wasn't leading the messaging as only he can really do. And for a while there, it seemed like the Democrats almost had the floor to themselves.
Oh, absolutely. They didn't have the floor to themselves. And even though the Democrats were largely blamed for the shutdown, a lot of the MAGA base, and let's not forget this coalition that created the MAGA base, including black voters and Latino men, right, that voted for Trump, all working class, by the way, are seeing the cost of living rise. And they're hearing about ballrooms, and they're hearing about, yay, we got trying to buy more soybeans and we're going to sell them NVIDIA chips. And that's not really exciting to the, to that base. And so Trump has to refocus and remind the people that voted for him what the America First agenda is all about. And as I say in the Daily Caller piece, even though the America First trade agenda is a domestic centric agenda, and that's what going to Asia was all about when he was in South Korea, signing a lot of those agreements with Southeast Asian countries. These are more or less longer term projects, right? These are things we're not going to see the results immediately. And of course, they're important and necessary, but a lot of people want to see things now, especially on the cost of living issue. And Trump really has to come out on that. He's going to come out swinging because they're going to really, the Democrats are going to come after him for that issue.
That's exactly right. I think one of the most interesting moves he made overseas was with the Central Asian republics and what he's trying to do there with critical minerals to break China's grasp on critical minerals trade. That's a long-term play. That's going to take a couple of years, probably after the end of his term, to really pay off. And you can't win that way. You've got to be focused on the near term as well. And in the near term, the Democrats had the shutdown right up until it blew up in their faces very suddenly. A couple of days ago, they had the shutdown as almost working for them, even though they did it.
Right. Well, the shutdown, they say, worked for them because it energized their base to turn out for some elections in states that we already knew was going to go to the Democrats. But it energized them. And let's not forget that if the Democrats decided to go with a clean continuing resolution and reopen the government, a lot of that base, you know, the blue sky Dems that were sharing memes of a guillotine with Chuck Schumer's head under it. Those are the crowd. That's the crowd. That's a very activist crowd, right? The Democrats increasingly have an activist core, right? That's becoming their base. It's not just a base of, you know, people who are old school libs. The base is becoming an activist group, and that base would have been really ticked off if the Democrats signed a clean CR to reopen the government. They wouldn't have come out they would have turned out in the polls, right? They would have stayed home. And so this shutdown did work for the government, I mean, for the Democrats, at least in that respect. But still, I think overall they were blamed for it. But, you know, that's in the past now. Trump really and his surrogates have to come out swinging and going against the narrative that's going to come forward from the Democrats that there's a cost of living issue. That's why Mamdani won. That's going to be their calling card now. Cost of living. It's too expensive. And he has to remind the people that the cost of living is worse in blue cities and states. What has the Democrats done for you lately? That's very simple to address, right? Not much. The cost of living is increasing there. And where the areas where prices are rising, John, it's really in the services area, right? So your electric bill is going up. Your internet bill is going up. So these don't have to do with tariffs, which is going to be something that the Democrats and people who oppose Trump are going to come out against. So he has to be ready to have a narrative prepared to protect America First agenda from that cost of living attack, which is going to be coming down the pike, especially next year, considering we have midterms in November. He has to be ready for that.
Are you surprised that the Democrats haven't played the tariff card a little harder? I sometimes wonder why they haven't hit that point more aggressively. They really don't mention the tariffs very much in their political rhetoric. And it's true that the inflationary effect of the tariffs was much less than feared, but it's not quite been zero, and things are not getting better the way Trump promised they would during his campaign.
Well, I think they haven't hit it that as hard because the inflation story hasn't been one where you could paint the, you know, shine a spotlight on goods prices being why we're in this inflation picture that we're still in. Even though it's only 2.7% or 3.2%, it's still high. It's still high compared to what it was years ago. Americans really almost need a deflationary environment right now because we're going 3% above what it was since the COVID years. Things are expensive. I think that the media has definitely, whenever they can, pushed back against Trump's policy as in the America First policy, right, which is mostly focused on tariff and convincing companies, large and small, to invest in the United States by making it less attractive to import labor and outsource labor. 60 Minutes last weekend did a whole sob story show about cotton farmers and how they're being devastated by tariffs. These are farmers that have been protected for years through subsidies and will continue to be protected. And they got huge subsidies during the COVID years, probably the equivalent of 2 years of subsidies they were given then. And of course those numbers have come down because we can't afford it. But the subsidies are there. They're protected. And again, the media has definitely gone after Trump on the America First agenda. And I suspect that because of the wins of Mamdani and because of the cost of living narrative that propelled him to victory, again, a victory everyone predicted, that's going to be a narrative that the Democrats use to go after Trump. And so he has to be ready to explain to Americans that the America First agenda is about protecting labor, getting wages to go up above inflation. It's time. And the cost of living is not an issue that the president, whether it's Biden or Trump, can immediately take care of. These are issues that go back to the cities and the states. Okay. And of course, you have corporations like Disney Plus, for example, that's going up for your internet service. These are things that the government can legislate to protect Americans from. So it's a very complicated issue. The best thing he could do is pressure the Fed to lower interest rates quickly, and those are coming down, but faster, and do whatever he can on the executive order side to flood the market with, oil and gas to get energy prices down. So your home heating oil is cheaper and your gasoline prices are cheaper, and that will affect inflation, and that'll matter to businesses as well. But it might not matter as much to electricity because, again, those things are regulated by the states.
You mentioned that the activist base on the left was a bit juiced by the shutdown, so it worked from that point. It got them energized. Now, Trump has his own activist base, the MAGA base, and right now they're beside themselves because Trump came out and seemed to throw in the towel on H-1B visas and started saying, hey, maybe we need a lot of these. And that had been, until now, a big winning issue for him, shutting down both illegal immigration and the abuse of legal immigration programs like the H-1B visa. And it seems like he's backing away from that, and the temperature in MAGA land right now is not great.
Yeah, right. The temperature is not great on H-1B. And of course, also, I think this is when he had the interview with Laura Ingraham when he talked about that recently, and also the need for some 600,000 Chinese students, which was always a topic of whether or not we should have them in here because some of them are spies, yada, yada. Yes, that's a very unpopular story. The H-1B is extremely unpopular, not because we're, not importing Sheldon Coopers of the world, rocket scientists and so on. This is what the tech bros will tell you that we need. We're importing marketing specialists and finance directors and, IT specialists who, any recent college grad can do. And I know many of them who do that type of work. So H-1B is a big problem. There has been, let's not forget though, Trump did increase the cost of bringing in H-1Bs in September through an executive order. I believe it's almost $100,000 now. So that price has gone up considerably, making it a little less attractive for companies to bring in H-1Bs, especially the ones that they really might not need, right, to just lower prices, lower wages for the American workforce, like I said, like the marketing guy or the IT solutions guy. You might be willing to pay that if you need some high-end 30, 40-year-old rocket scientists. You might be willing to pay that. But for the lower guys, that might not be as attractive anymore. So despite the fact that Trump did say we need the H-1B guys, he did raise the cost of importing them.
And that seems like a really huge issue for the young people. They're in a very volatile place right now, and you can understand why. They don't know what kind of future is looking at them, what the job market's going to be like. Are there going to be jobs for them? And meanwhile, the cost of living is going up. They can't buy homes. So that is a constituency that's going to be very hotly contested in the times to come, and President Trump needs to fight for them. Kenneth Raposa, industry analyst for the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Would you know where to turn if you or loved one suddenly became paralyzed? Paralysis isn't something you plan for, but the National Paralysis Resource Center has served as a vital lifeline for thousands of families. But federal funding for the program is at risk. Marine veteran Sherman Gillums Jr., Senior Director of Public Policy at the Christopher and Dana Reeve Foundation, says the consequences could be devastating.
This is about more than just a budget line. It's about veterans, caregivers, and families, real people who need these resources to live more productive and independent lives.
Gillums, who lives with paralysis himself, says cutting this funding would remove critical resources like peer mentoring, help with housing, and job placement guidance.
When you take away these lifelines, people must figure out how to rebuild their lives on their own. And that's not something any family should have to do.
Learn about the importance of funding for the National Paralysis Resource Center at ChristopherReeve.org.
On Sunday, November 2nd, Americans will fall back to standard time, despite growing concerns over the health and safety risks of seasonal time changes. According to sleep experts, making standard time permanent could improve the lives of millions, and the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time and its partner, the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, are working to make that a reality. Dr. Karin Johnson, sleep medicine physician and co-chair of the Coalition for Permanent Standard Time.
When our schedules align with the timing of natural light, people benefit from brighter mornings, safer commutes to work and school, and improved sleep at night.
Want to lessen the effects of the time change? Try these tips. Get at least 7 hours of sleep per night before and after the change. Adjust the timing of daily routines like meals and exercise, and head out for early morning sunlight during the week after the time change. For more information about ending daylight saving time and to find additional resources about sleep disorders, treatments, and sleep health, visit sleepeducation.org, sponsored by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something
it's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. The Center for Security Policy has released a report that finds America is now locked in a new Cold War with China. And this Cold War could be more important than even the last one was, because this one is about the defining technology of the century to come, artificial intelligence. Here with us to talk about it is Chris Hoare, a seasoned entrepreneur with a career spanning technology, satellite communications, and emerging technologies portfolio in England and the United States. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
I had no trouble believing this report. Artificial intelligence is a profound world-shifting technology in its infancy today, but already doing things that astound people. And in the years to come, it's going to become the next century's data equivalent of a nuclear weapon. And the Center for Security Policy says China is on the verge of winning this war.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Unfortunately, China has had this in mind for quite some time. As I'm sure you understand, they have their five-year plans, and their five-year plan that ends in 2030 is to basically be dominating artificial intelligence, including the production of the software, the components, and everything else we use for AI. And the rate things are going, unfortunately, they seem to be in a pretty good position.
What is the new Cold War with AI? What makes it so dangerous? The old Cold War was about geopolitical alliances, huge amounts of money and power, nuclear weapons. What is AI going to do that's going to make all of that look like child's play?
Well, AI and super AI and other variants of it that are coming out are basically going to be running everything. But it's not just the AI itself. It's how it's powered. It's how we use it. And what China has foreseen is that the rare earth elements that are used for everything that you need, from data centers to screens to chips, is going to be how you win this war in the long run. And right now, unfortunately, China controls between 60% and 70% of the earth's rare earth elements. And that puts them in a very strong position. And what they're seeking to do is basically flood the planet with cheap AI devices, are running on their AI software and programs and platforms. And, you know, the West has dominated electronics and electronic standards since the beginning. But unfortunately, we can't afford to lose the war for basically the dominance of AI and which systems dominate the planet.
There are two other things you need for AI dominance besides those rare earths to make the chips. One of them is energy, because AI processing centers consume stupendous amounts of energy. And that's a place where China's a little shaky, because they're perpetually having energy droughts. But on the other hand, they don't have a lot of environmentalist concerns, and they will build as many coal and nuclear plants as they need to get the power they need. And then the third thing you need is data. And that was the thing that first made me worried years ago, when I looked at how China has no privacy concerns to speak of. They'll take data from anywhere they can get it. They'll steal yours. They'll rob data from every computer system on the planet and feed it all into their AIs. It's almost like their AIs are just better nourished than anything that we're growing here in the West.
Well, yeah, certainly. They're not restricted by laws or morals. They set both the laws and the morals that suit them at the time, depending on what their goal is. But when it comes to power, you're absolutely right. You know, powering AI is going to be one of the things that determines the outcome of this race. And China has taken, unfortunately, American technology we developed back starting in the 60s and 70s, and that we abandoned because of various environmental concerns and other concerns. And they've taken that information and they've kind of taken it further, allowing them to fire up nuclear power stations that are more efficient, cheaper, and that could produce more energy. So, you know, this war is not over, but we certainly need to be fighting back just as hard as they are, if not harder.
In the United States, one of the great anxieties about AI is how it's going to put people out of work. It makes some jobs obsolete. It could really trigger a gigantic seismic change in the nature of the workforce as more physical labor goes away. China already has bad unemployment problems. Aren't they even more concerned that AI is going to destroy their economy?
I mean, I'm sure that they are at the CCP, but there again, you know, what comes first in China is the well-being of the party, not the well-being of the Chinese citizen. And so, you know, whilst they certainly see the same problems that we do, potentially, although it is worth saying that, you know, around the time of the Industrial Revolution, people were saying the same thing, there's going to be no jobs and so on. You know, so I think it remains to be seen. AI certainly will create new jobs and new opportunities in societies where that kind of thing is allowed. But yeah, they will, I think in China specifically, it will leave them with a mass unemployment issue, at least, even if they don't see it as a problem.
Where do we stand on the military applications of AI? The big fear has always been AI-controlled drone swarms and how devastating and fast-moving they could be. All of your super powerful military weapons, your aircraft carriers, your missile launchers, none of that will mean much if AI-controlled drone swarms can just take them apart.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, you know, this is already happening. We're already seeing AI being put in charge of weapon systems and individual drones, planes, and so on. But, you know, there is a cautionary tale here because anyone who's used an LLM or used AI for anything at all will most likely understand that whilst it can be very good at some things, it can be very bad at other things. And it's hard often to get an AI platform to not do something. Because you can say, look, don't paint the house red. And it'll say, okay, I won't paint it red, but I'll paint it green and yellow because you didn't tell it not to do that. You know, and that's a very, obviously, that's a very basic, you know, situation. But the thing is that AI can develop its own mind, its own thinking, and its own rationales and reasoning. And this is what, you know, I think going to be one of the issues when we see AI put in charge of large amounts of weapons and other warfare items.
On the other end of the scale, you have the entertainment industry, which right now in the Western world is very concerned about artificial intelligence infringing on its copyrights. AI-generated movies, music, and so forth is a big concern for them. And if China does seize dominance of artificial intelligence, none of that's going to matter. If Chinese studios decide they want to use likenesses of American actors and whatnot to make a movie, they're just going to do it. And there's not a darn thing Hollywood can do about it.
Yeah, no, you bring up a great point. And look, I mean, China has been, you know, ignoring our kind of rules and copyright rules forever. And of course, doing its best to steal everything that we produce and then run from there. So, you know, this is nothing new. It certainly does present, you know, a clear and present danger to many U.S. industries and certainly including entertainment. I think we also need to be concerned about the way that it's used to influence people. Obviously, in China, they have the social credit score, and they use that to influence and basically dictate people's behavior. Along with that comes fake news and certainly, at the very least, the exploitation of facts.
And which would be kind of coming full circle because China justified the creation of its massive censorship state by saying they just wanted to fight misinformation. And now they're on the verge of taking a century-long lead in the most dangerous disinformation weapons ever known to mankind. So I don't think anything good would come of that. Chris Hoare, seasoned intrapreneur with a career in technology, satellite comms, and emerging technologies in England and America. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.